From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Most people are repulsed by the sight of a cockroach, but we hear why Johns Hopkins researcher Sean Gart finds inspiration in the creepy crawlers to inform robotic design. And we talk with Derek Paley, director of the Collective Dynamics and Control Laboratory at the University of Maryland College Park. He examines the fluid movements of fish to improve underwater vehicle function and tells us why scientists look to nature for answers.
Bioinspiration says, well, there's a capability that we observe in this organism. Can we replicate that, or replicate at least the function that the organism uses to achieve some new capability in an autonomous or robotic system?
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Most people are repulsed by the sight of a cockroach. They could never imagine that some researchers find inspiration in the creepy crawling invader. And in fact, technology takes lots of cues from the elegant design that exists in the natural world. Later in the show, we'll meet a researcher who studies the fluid movements of fish to improve the way underwater autonomous vehicles function. But right now, we're concentrating on cockroaches. Sean Gart is with us. He is a postdoctoral fellow at Johns Hopkins Whiting School of Engineering. At his lab, it's dozens of those scurrying roaches that inspire the work. Welcome to On the Record, Sean.
Hi, nice to be here.
Cockroaches. Why study them?
Well, they are extremely robust creatures. They're very fast. They can move in a variety of environments. They're also very difficult, I'm sure many people know, to squish. So they can withstand your slaps and your stomps pretty well. So they're good model organisms for us.
Model organisms. Is this studying ways to avoid obstacles?
So it's less about obstacle avoidance and more about how they actually cross an obstacle. So you don't have to, say, go around or avoid an obstacle. They can use maybe more direct, a direct pathway to whatever the goal is.
And why is it important to research that, heading headlong into an obstacle rather than avoiding it?
Right. So, I mean, you can save time if you don't have to avoid an obstacle. Also, some obstacles really you can't avoid. So if it's very wide or something like that, you need to just run fast and try and cross it.
And that's what you're learning from cockroaches. Mm-hmm. Your lab is called the Terra Dynamics Lab. What is mm-hmm. Terra Dynamics?
It's essentially analogous to aero and hydrodynamics in that we are trying to find the underlying physics of moving in on the ground in very complex terrains. So previous researchers, you know, fluid mechanics, aerodynamics are very well studied problems. They have been for maybe even a century or more. And so we have very well established theories in those fields that can then help us make aerial or aquatic vehicles. But for movement on the ground, the ground that's not flat, maybe has lots of obstacles, we really don't have these physics principles to help us guide the design of robots. So that's what we're working towards.
So describe your workspace, your lab. How is it set up?
All right. So we're in a basement at Johns Hopkins. We basically built an obstacle track for the animal and the robot.
Obstacle track for the animal, that would be the cockroach.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What does an obstacle track for a cockroach look like?
We have a lot of lights surrounding it to get for our high-speed video cameras, and we basically put the cockroach on one end in kind of a little bit of an enclosed space, and then you have a little funnel that directs the cockroach towards the obstacle. So then I basically take a stick with a little piece of tape on the end and try to whack it on the back and scare it, and then it runs very fast.
Whack the cockroach on the back.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And scare it, and it runs. And you mentioned high-speed cameras. That's how you can actually study it?
Right. So, yeah, our cameras are can film at a pretty high rate of speed. So you can get, I think we filmed at maybe 500 frames per second. So there we can basically put these little tags on the back of the cockroach. They kind of look like little backpacks. And we use the multiple cameras to basically essentially triangulate the 3D position of the animal. So we can measure the velocity, its body orientation, and all of that very quickly.
And what are you looking for?
We're really looking for when the cockroaches were running very fast towards the obstacle, they can't really sense the obstacle or their environment quick enough, just because they're running so fast. You can imagine if you're running really fast, you're tired. If somebody comes out of the blue and hits you, you might not see it because you're so focused on moving fast. It's similar with the cockroach. So,
By the way, is their eyesight not great?
Not great. Yeah. So they're very they have antenna that they use primarily that are very good.
But that's got to be for things that are close by, right?
Right. So in our case, they're running so fast that even if they touched the obstacle with their antenna, they couldn't really slow down in time. But we also found that despite this, they were able to cross a gap obstacle or a bump obstacle pretty well. And what we found was that when they, especially for a gap obstacle, when the animal is running very fast, it tends to be more successful at crossing the gap. And also we found that by measuring the body orientation, so we looked at the body pitch. So we found when
the angle that it is...
The angle that it's kind of pitched up over the ground. You could think of it pushing its front legs up to kind of raise the front of the body upwards. So when they were in that kind of orientation, they were also much better at crossing a gap. Essentially, because as the animal run towards the gap, it's going to lose contact with its front legs and start to fall in. So the more pitched up you are, the longer it takes for you to fall in. And if you run faster, you have you can cover a longer distance before you fall in as well.
That's Sean Gart, a postdoctoral fellow at Johns Hopkins Whiting School of Engineering, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Gart and his colleagues study the locomotion of cockroaches to inform robotic design. He's lead author of their research findings. What would you say the main finding is? What did you discover?
So most robots use basically the cameras and other sensors to kind of have a geometric view of the world, and it knows, okay, there's an obstacle, I need to avoid it. But what was really missing is the kind of the physics of obstacle traversals. So what happens when you run into the obstacle or you can't avoid the obstacle? And so we're kind of using what we discover there to help design robots and control strategies for robots to traverse complex terrains.
What might be the real world applications from your findings?
Right. Yeah. So I guess, the ultimate goal is to improve robots that are going on these search and rescue missions where you have terrain like, say, building rubble or maybe a flood or landslide. And these types of obstacles that we're studying are very common in those types of terrain. So, our goal is just to study how they can cross these obstacles to eventually improve robot performance. So if your robot performs better, it can search a wider area, it can search for a longer time. These are all good things as far as, say, a search and rescue robot goes.
Well, I appreciate you telling us about them. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sean Gart is a postdoctoral fellow at Johns Hopkins Whiting School of Engineering. He's the lead author of research findings from studies he and his colleagues have done of how cockroaches get around. The goal is to improve the design of robots. We have a link to the video of an incredibly determined cockroach from Gart's lab at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. Quick break now on The Record. When we're back, we'll ask a University of Maryland researcher what studying fish propulsion has taught him about underwater vehicle design. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about how the natural world influences technological development. Earlier, we spoke with a researcher who examines cockroach locomotion for clues to better robotic design. Joining us now is Derek Paley, the Willis H. Young Professor of Aerospace Engineering Education at the University of Maryland College Park and the Institute for Systems Research there. He's the founding director of the Collective Dynamics and Control Laboratory, where, as part of their research, he and his colleagues look at the ways fish move and sense their surroundings. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you.
Why use biology as a basis for robotics research?
Well, we look to natural systems for the remarkable capabilities that they have, because when we're developing robotic systems and autonomous systems in general, we're interested to be able to have them operate without any human intervention. And so when we look at natural systems like fish, for example, we see the remarkable way that they interact with their environment and operate. And so it's an aspirational goal to have our robots do the same.
So basically, they have a lot to teach engineers.
That's right. Yeah, with fish in particular, we're interested in a couple different aspects. For example, we're looking at how fish sensory systems operate and how we can endow our submarines, our unmanned vehicles, with the same type of ability to perceive the fluidic environment nearby. Fish, for example, have a lateral line system that allows them to perceive obstacles and to perceive other fish. And they use a lateral line system in combination with their other senses like vision.
I'm not getting what a lateral line system is.
The lateral line system in fish is a system of sensors that is on that are on the exterior of the fish body. In some fish, it's actually quite pronounced and it looks like a stripe along the side of the fish. But in fact, it consists of sensor nodes that are all along not only the sides of the fish, but also the forehead and the jaws of the fish.
And it's sensing what?
It senses, it's composed of tiny hair cells that are encased in little gelatinous mounds called cupula. And when the water passes over these mounds, it displaces them because they're very flexible. And that causes the hair cells to generate a neural signal to the fish. And by having many sensors all around the body of the fish, it can perceive the direction of the water flow nearby, can perceive the speed of the water flow, and it can perceive other structures in the environment that may be upstream that may be casting a certain wake signature. And so that would
explain that to me. They can feel something that's not next to them, something upstream.
That's right. The lateral line sense is typically a very short-range sense, so about a body length away. But when the fish are swimming upstream, then wake signatures from sources that are further upstream get passed down, and they travel in the direction of the flow. The lateral line sense is also used to avoid predators, because an oncoming predator will generate a certain signal, and the lateral line can trigger a reflex known as a startle response or an escape response, and so the fish use the lateral line sense to avoid getting eaten. My research was more about developing engineering analogs to the lateral line system that we can add to our robotics, our robotic vehicles, to give them the same capabilities.
So how do you capture the movements of fish to study them?
We have a water channel in our laboratory that basically is sort of like a fish treadmill. And so the fish can swim in the water channel, and we can study them. We've done studies, for example, on startle response, where we put computer monitors on either side of the water channel that generated an artificial predator stimuli. It was just a looming oval on a white background, and that startled the fish through their visual sense, and we recorded their movements using an overhead camera so we could study how they responded individually and in groups to the predator stimulus.
When you said visual sense, it reminded me everything you've been talking about up to that moment, you were talking about something the fish feels.
That's right.
Not something that they are looking at.
That's right, yeah. So we study what we think of as multimodal sensing. So the fish combine their visual sense or lateral line sense and also their vestibular sense, which is the inner ear sense that even humans have as well, that allows us to perceive motion and acceleration. And so the fish have a vestibular sense in their inner ear, just like humans. And so the combination of those three sensing modalities allow the fish to exhibit certain behaviors. For example, fish have a tendency to swim upstream, which is called reataxis, and they use the lateral line system for that. So we do sensory deprivation experiments. For example, we do experiments when the lights are out so we can see how well they do without vision, and in different combinations of the lateral line and vestibular sense. And so we've built robotic prototypes that have sensor nodes on them that basically replicate the function of the lateral line system. And our goal is to use those sensors in a feedback control loop that replicates the fish behavior.
When you say you build robotic prototypes, that's what I would call a model, right?
Yeah.
Does it look like a fish?
It does, actually. Our latest fish robot is actually made of rubber, and it has a fish silhouette. It's designed to swim using not only fish-inspired sensing, but also fish-inspired propulsion. And so we've talked a little bit about the sensing, but on the propulsion side, we have basically a motor inside the fish that spins a heavy disc, a heavy metal disc, which is called a momentum wheel. And when the motor spins the momentum wheel one way, just like on this chair that I'm sitting on,
On a chair that swings around, a sort of a swivel chair.
Yeah, so when the motor spins the wheel one way inside the body of the fish, because the motor itself is attached to the interior of the fish, then the fish actually spins the other way. And by spinning the momentum wheel back and forth in the interior of the fish, we can generate flapping motion. And of course, just like in fish, that flapping motion of a flexible body generates propulsion, or what we call thrust. And so the fish, our model fish, swims and looks actually very fish-like.
The point of understanding that movement and generating the flapping motion again is for what application?
Well, we are conducting basic research that is designed to study, designed, as we say, to use bio-inspiration to develop new autonomous systems. In the case of this particular project...
Bio-inspiration.
That's the word we use.
To develop new autonomous systems. Would you translate that?
Sure. So the idea is, as opposed to biomimicry, where we're exactly copying something that we see in nature, bioinspiration says, well, there's a capability that we observe in this organism. Can we replicate that, or replicate at least the function, if not the actual approach that the organism uses to achieve some new capability in an autonomous or robotic system? And our fish-inspired project is just one of those, where we are interested in developing novel sensing and actuation or propulsion systems for underwater vehicles that deviate from traditional methods. For example, traditionally, underwater vehicles are propelled using a propeller. By replacing the propeller with a soft, rubbery tail and the momentum, at least for very small platforms, generates a much more efficient and even quieter means of propulsion.
That's Derek Paley, director of the Collective Dynamics and Control Laboratory in the Department of Aerospace Engineering at the University of Maryland, College Park. Here on The Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his research in fish propulsion. Does the autonomous underwater vehicle development piggyback on the technology of self-driving cars?
It's interesting you say that. Actually, autonomy, the science of autonomy and research in autonomous systems was actually pioneered in the underwater domain long before there were self-driving cars. If you can imagine, in the underwater domain, there is no GPS because GPS signals can't pass through water. There's no communication for the same reason. And so unlike an aerial vehicle or a ground vehicle where there's ever-present navigation and the opportunity for remote operation, for example, we see this with aerial drones. There's a pilot on the ground basically flying the plane remotely. That is not possible in the underwater domain when a ocean-going system is deployed, unless there's a tether, what we call a remotely operated vehicle. An untethered vehicle has to navigate and guide itself because there's really virtually no efficient way to connect it to a pilot. There are means to communicate acoustically. We see this in nature, for example, with whales and other mammals. We've developed, there is a technology for acoustic transmission information, but it's very slow. If you imagine the old dial-up modems, they used to use the phone line to connect to the internet. It's kind of like that. So instead, about 20 or so years ago, the Navy funded research in autonomous systems for underwater vehicles and developed a wide array of vehicles that were designed to sense and measure information in the ocean pertaining to ocean processes, including climate change. And these measurements have to be collected over vast regions, and so the vehicles have to have very long endurance. They do periodically come to the surface to get their GPS measurement, but in the intervening times when they're underwater, they have to be autonomous. And so the progression of autonomy actually started out in the underwater domain, and then we saw it in the air domain, and now finally we're seeing it in the ground domain for self-driving cars.
You mentioned that your fish project, was your phrase, is inspired by fish. So do you have other projects inspired by other animals?
We do. My lab has a number of different bio-inspired engineering projects. We actually have been having a lot of fun in the soft robotics domain. Soft robotics is a term that's being used to describe robotic systems that are flexible. They're made of rubbery or otherwise soft materials as opposed to traditional robots, which are more constrained by stiff, rigid elements. And so in the soft robotics regime, the FISH project was the first one that we got underway on. And more recently, we've started a Caterpillar-inspired project. So we're building a soft robotic caterpillar.
For what purpose?
This project is funded by the Army Research Office, and it's intended to create a soft robotic platform that may be used for search and rescue, for accessing very difficult terrain. Caterpillars have a remarkable ability to walk over all kinds of surfaces and cling to, you know, a variety of different inclinations, even perhaps upside down. And so building a soft robotic caterpillar will allow us not only to explore and advance the field of soft robotics, but develop a new platform that could be useful for search and rescue and disaster relief and other applications. We also have a project that is inspired by starfish, or what we call sea stars. Sea stars have the ability to walk and cling to a variety of different surfaces, just like caterpillars, but they operate in the underwater environment.
And do you also do aerial drone research?
We do. We historically have been interested in group behavior, and so one of our drone projects has to do with swarming. And so we actually collaborated with the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases a few years ago to study swarming behavior in mosquitoes. The NIAID was interested in malarial mosquitoes, and the fact that malarial mosquitoes are actually the world's deadliest animal in terms of their ability to transmit malaria. And so we partnered with them to develop technology to film swarms of mosquitoes. And we did this in Mali, in Africa. My graduate student spent 3 weeks there filming malarial mosquitoes in order to reconstruct their flight movements, in particular to study how male mosquitoes form swarms and how female mosquitoes are drawn into those swarms in order to mate. Mosquitoes only mate one time in their life, and so the idea was if it was possible to understand better the mating swarms and the behavior in the mating swarms, then it may be possible to disrupt that in order to reduce the population of the mosquitoes.
I'm really grateful to you for telling us about it. Thank you so much.
Sure. Happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Derek Paley is founding director of the Collective Dynamics and Control Laboratory in the Department of Aerospace Engineering at the University of Maryland College Park. He has a joint appointment in the Institute for Systems Research. We've been talking about his research on fish propulsion and how that translates to improving underwater unmanned vehicle design. Earlier, we spoke with Sean Gart from Johns Hopkins University. His lab examines cockroach locomotion to enhance robotic design. We have a link to both labs' research findings at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks!